Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. We all want children in our communities to be safe. According to the New Mexico Department of Health, reports of alleged child abuse and neglect have risen in recent years. What interventions have shown the greatest promise in reaching parents who may be abusing or neglecting their kids? That's our focus today, and we want to hear from you. Do you think prevention programs can help end child abuse? What do you think leads to abuse in our communities? And can parents learn to handle the stress of parenthood well before any events that might put a child's life in danger? We did invite the Children, Youth, and Families Department to join us today and provide comments, but CYFD declined. We have Susan Miller with us by phone to start the hour. She's a child psychologist and the executive director of the New Mexico Child Abuse Prevention Partnership. Susan has just a few minutes to speak with us today before she meets with patients. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I'm excited to be here.
We really want to talk about abuse and neglect today that doesn't make headlines. When maltreatment doesn't necessarily mean a child is showing up in the emergency room with physical injuries, can you help start us off by defining what is neglect?
Absolutely. Neglect can be anything that provides, that keeps a child from being school ready, from having clothes, not having enough food, perhaps not being immunized, not being fed emotionally, being held, hugged, different things like that. That's all in the category of neglect. And neglect in New Mexico has gone up 21%.
And how can that impact the development of a child as they're growing up?
Well, one of the things I think that is really huge is mommies and daddies right now in this category are having a difficult time themselves with financial issues or drugs or alcohol, and they're having a very difficult time having the time to hug their child. You know, their child is going to other people to be taken care of. Maybe there's not enough food. Mommy has to work and boyfriend's watching baby. It's a very, very difficult time for a lot of our New Mexicans out there, and especially our families at risk.
We're going to talk this hour about the entire family and meeting those needs of parents. But where does prevention fit in statewide efforts to reduce abuse and neglect overall?
Absolutely. NMCAP, which is our organization for prevention, has been working very hard on awareness. And this year, we have turned our focus more towards education and training statewide with the help of many of our statewide partners. So it's a collaborative effort. We also are collaborating with ECHO, which is a mentoring opportunity using video to reach out into every area in the state and do some really good training so that the community health workers that do see these families can help them. And they can get help. The community health workers can get help also to be able to get referrals and the things that they need. And one of the things we're doing now, is with this organization, the Community Health Workers of New Mexico, we are working to build a certification for child abuse prevention so that they can recognize families at risk and we can step in with the referrals and things they need before an event happens.
Mm. We spoke with one of your colleagues this week, and he said child abuse is 100% preventable. Is that a message that you guys are trying to send these days?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is so preventable. And what people don't realize is child abuse is not a disease. It is a behavior. You choose to do this. And that's a really sad thing, that people would choose to hurt a child.
Well, you know, some folks listening right now might be thinking, you know, there's something wrong with those parents who hurt their children and they should just lose them immediately. What would you say to that?
Right. No, there are a lot of reasons that families, that this happens. A lot of it is lack of education, lack of resources. We need to begin helping the communities to build affordable childcare that is safe for children so that mommies who whose boyfriends are taking care of the babies because mommy has the job, they're not left with someone who will abuse them.
Susan, thank you so much for starting us off today. We do appreciate you taking the time. We're going to hear from some other folks who are working with families on the ground across New Mexico. Susan Miller, Executive Director of the New Mexico Child Abuse Prevention Network. I'd like to go now to Delfina Romero. She's with us by phone from Española. Delfina is the Family Education Services and Conjunto Preschool Director for the Las Cumbres Community Services, which serves families in the counties of Rio Arriba, Los Alamos, and Santa Fe. Welcome to the show, Delfina.
Good morning.
We also have Liana Moreno on the line. She's the clinical supervisor for the home visiting program with Las Cumbres. Welcome, Liana.
Thank you. Good morning.
Liana, I have a question for you. New Mexico is a rural state. We often hear from folks about the needs of rural communities that they're absent from conversations about policies and about big issues like what we're talking about today. What are some of the unique challenges that families are facing in rural communities that you serve through Las Cumbres?
Well, I would say that distance and ability to access supports and services in their area is what we find most at need for the families that we serve. It's hard if there's a need coming up for a family that we have around behavioral health or other accesses to community supports like physical or emotional health. It's difficult to access those resources because they're just not there in the rural community.
Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean, that there's not pediatricians or the right kind of doctors for parents to get to?
Right. So there's a clinic system up north, but there's a lack of pediatricians that serve families in the northern regions. And a lot of my families I find on the edge of Rio Arriba County, like way up north, like for instance in Dulce, they will go to Farmington or Albuquerque for those types of resources.
And what does that mean for families? What does that add stress to their lives? What do you hear from them?
Definitely add stress. I mean, when we think about going to a well child check, for instance, and you live in the city, you're going to schedule that appointment, and it's maybe a half an hour appointment. You need to take off of work and take your child there. Perhaps an hour you take out of your day doing that with your child. For our families that are in more rural communities up north, that's a much longer trip for them. They need to spend maybe 2 hours in the car getting their child to the well baby check.
Thanks for that. We're going to welcome now Frankie Duran. Frankie, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Frankie, you're program manager and director for the Home Visiting with PB&J Family Services in Albuquerque. We'd like to have you jump into this conversation here. Why is prevention important for you? You've been working for PB&J for many years directly with families. Why is prevention important?
Well, prevention is important on so many levels, but here in the state of New Mexico, prevention is very, very important because that is the way that we keep our children safe, the way that we can make sure that our children are living free of abuse and neglect and just having their basic needs met many times.
Absolutely. And how does prevention fit in with the services you're offering at PB&J to families?
Well, prevention fits into our services because many of our families who come in to access services, there are many risk factors, and our job is to make sure that we are putting the protections in place that are needed to ensure that these children are able to grow and develop to their full potential. They are able to have all the supports and services that they need, that their family may need. Many times it's serving parents for many of the needs that they never had that were met. So we have to remember that we all started out as an infant, as a child. And many times for many of our parents, they didn't have the nurturing home environment that they needed to pass on to their children. So it's very difficult. I don't think that anybody ever feels good coming in saying, hey, you know, I don't feel like I'm the best parent. Hey, I feel that I'm not doing the best job at this. So it's really our job to come in and just really to give them that space and just being able to hold them and letting them know that it's okay. None of us are perfect. And with support, we all can be better. So prevention is, it plays really a huge role in PB&J. That's really what we do, and really trying to take that therapeutic approach and support them and let them know that it's okay and giving them that space.
Mm. We'll get into that just a little more in a moment. I want to invite folks to who are listening today to call in and share what they're thinking. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about how to prevent child abuse and neglect here in New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus. I'm joined by Frankie Duran from PB&J Family Services. We also have some folks from the Fathers Building Futures Program. And we have folks from Las Cumbres Community Services that serves northern New Mexico. Did you experience abuse or neglect growing up? Can you see ways this has impacted you as an adult today? Did you, as Frankie said, grow up with parents who weren't giving you exactly what you needed, and you want to do things differently with your own children? We want to hear how you've addressed that in your family, how you're taking on those challenges, or if you need help and you want to talk about where to start. Give us a call at 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. Outside of Albuquerque, 877-899-5866. So, Frankie, in the home visiting model, home visitors are talking to parents about those issues exactly, about how they want to raise their children, issues in the family. Maybe they're experiencing some financial stress or some emotional stress. How do the people you work with in the home visiting program build those relationships with families, build that trust?
Well, one of the key things that we do is going in and letting families know that they're not going to be judged. So it's, you know, what we know as trauma-informed services, but really treating families like human beings. So we're not focusing on if you have the biggest home or how much money you make a year or what your past is. Really what we want to let people know is we're not there to judge. We want to begin a place of healing for them. It really is to let people know that it's okay. So the approach that we use is, I guess, our PB&J approach, kind of how we've been trained, how I train my staff. We're there just to offer any kind of support that we can. So we're not putting anything off of the table. A lot of times, it's not just a food box. If we're going into the home and maybe we see that there's not a lot of furniture in the home, maybe mom needs clothing, maybe, you know, there's not a lot of toys in the home, we're also asking about those things because I think what we think sometimes are just little things and we look past it. It means the world to a lot of people when families are telling you a family of five are sharing two bath towels and you could say, well, do you need bath towels? I could bring you some next time. You know, do you need sheets for the bed? And even though that they're used, to be able to give that to a family at the end of the day, and it really makes them feel that somebody cares. So a lot of times, you know, we can't even go into touching into the area of parenting right away. We need to get down to help to meet families' basic needs, to let them know that they have a support. Letting them know that we are PB&J, and then when we add on the next piece, family services. That's really, could really be a game changer, because when we throw in family services right away, you see a red flag come up and they're kind of like, well, so, you know, are you going to be looking through my refrigerator? Are you going to call CYFD because maybe I don't have, you know, enough food today? Or, you know, families are very fearful. So making sure we have that therapeutic approach going in.
A lot of families might have had a negative experience with CYFD in the past, either when they were children or they've seen things in their community that's made them not want to interact with officials.
Well, these services have been put in place for families who need them. And a lot of times what we're seeing is families who need these services the most are not utilizing them because of that fear of being hurt from past institutions. One of the things that PB&J does inform families when we go in to work with them is we are mandated reporters. We are for the best interest of the child. We are never going to look past if a child is being abused, neglected. But at the same time, PB&J wants families to know that we have a no backdoor policy. We will never contact CYFD. Well, I shouldn't say never if we didn't, you know, cases are so different, but our policy is really that families are informed first of when that happens before we contact them. We feel that they have that right to know. We don't ever want them to ever, when we leave their home finishing a home visit, thinking, gosh, are they going to call CYFD today? Is that call going to happen? Because that's happened a lot of times. It's not something that any of us like to do, that any of us want a reason for that. That's what we're trying to do, is put those protections in place so that we could keep families together. That is PB&J's goal, keeping families together.
Frankie, thanks for that. We're going to hear more in just a minute. We need to take a break. This is the KUNM call-in show. You can call in and share your thoughts on preventing child abuse, what you think is working or would work in your community. The number is 277-5866, outside of Albuquerque, 877-899-5866.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, two scholars who have written world histories of peace.
If you look at how history is written, it tends to be a series of wars, and that gives me a really skewed view of history. It's a negative view of history that sees wars as the main punctuations and completely overlooks the periods of peace in between them.
Histories of Peacemaking, next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM call-in show. Today we're talking about child abuse prevention. I'd like to take a call now from Andres in Rio Arriba. Andres, you're on the line.
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Andres, what's your comment or question today?
Yes, I've been in education close to 30 years. You see a lot of things, you know, here, you know, especially the economical status, you know, of our state. And sometimes even having a reliable vehicle to take the kids to a two-hour distance appointment, you know, and just things like that, you know, maybe if those clinics had a van or something that they can pick up the kids and go and pick. I know it's kind of straining them, but if it's going to prevent a lot of abuse and stuff, and that would certainly help, you know, even in the transportation of to and from for the appointments. And it's a small price to pay for, you know, for having some type of assistance for some of these rural families, you know, that sometimes just having a reliable vehicle, you know, is a big issue, really. Sometimes, you know, they need to be jumping their cars just to start them, or their tires are bad, or they don't have gas, you know, money for gas or stuff like that. So transportation is always a biggie. And then, of course, you know, the economic status. And then the starting families early, you know, it's always tough because a lot of these, they start their families real early and they don't, you know, have a full-time job or whatever. And it just makes it really hard on the family to continue being, and like you said, a regular, stable family without having to have those flare-ups, because any little thing can create a flare-up. That's just minute as anything, and I just wanted to comment on that, you know, as far as that is.
Andres, I appreciate you calling today. Those are very important points, and we'll talk a little bit more about that with some of our guests this hour. Thank you. I'd like to go now to John in Albuquerque. John, what's your comment or question today?
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
So, three or four points.
John, can you limit it to one or two? We've got a lot of calls coming in now.
They're very brief.
Okay.
I just helped my little boy learn how to tie his shoes this morning. Had I not taught him to do that, he wouldn't know. And it goes down to parents don't wake up being parents. And a lot of the kids that we have in this state who become parents didn't have any skills, and they don't have any skills to pass on. And we need to do that. And but we can't make these people a ward of the state. We need to make them independent people and good parents and pass those skills on. And that's part of the prevention. The other point I want to make real quickly is, if your listeners didn't know, that people who help children in child abuse and neglect and prevention and social services and psychological services, most of these agencies haven't received a raise for what they get to provide those services in over 20 years, except for one time. No operation can operate without resources to do what is necessary. And I want to make sure that people are aware of that and that they tell their legislators, if we value children in the state, we have to take care of children better than we take care of pets. We value dogs and cats in the state more than we value children. And while we should value children and pets alike, I think that our order of priorities are messed up. And I just wanted to point those things out.
John, thanks for your call today. I'd like to go now to Kayla in Los Lunas. Kayla, can you hear me?
I can.
What's your comment or your story you want to share today?
I don't know if it's going to be too long, but I kind of briefly just wanted to let you know that I heard what you guys were talking about this morning on my way to bring my son to school right now, actually. And I was abused as a kid, not so much physical, but more verbal and mental. And I'll be 30 this year, and I still struggle with it very deeply within me. And I never wanted kids because of that. You know, I think a lot of us as adults, when we were abused as kids, we kind of resent having kids around because it brings us back to that mental state, that state of fear and, you know, insecurity. And a lot of times I find myself in that place, but I got saved a few years ago. And I think that my faith in God has helped me so much, because the Word of God says that we are more than overcomers through Jesus Christ. And he has really helped me see that I don't have to be the person who abused me. I can be my children's hero. I can be the person that I needed as a child. And that really has helped me to just put myself in their shoes and my own as a child and remember those ugly things. I don't want to be that. I want to be the opposite of that for my kids. I think that a lot of people as adults who were abused as children, we remember and we hold on to the ugly words that were said to us. And we need to just remember that we are not what they told us we were. We are not what they treated us like. We are not what we feel. And you know, in this ugly world today, the world's just getting uglier and uglier for children to be around. Us as parents, we need to stand up and take a stand for our children. Otherwise, nobody will. And I just wanted to share that.
Kayla, thank you so much. We really appreciate you speaking from the heart and calling in today and sharing that. I think that means a lot to people who are listening. Frankie, you're nodding your head right now. Does that mean something to you hearing Kayla's story?
Thank you, Kayla, for sharing your story. I think I'm so passionate about my work because these are the stories that I hear every day. As I'm driving with a parent, maybe taking them somewhere in the community, the processing of trauma just starts to happen in my passenger seat. Many of these stories, I hold them with me. Over 10 years I've been with PB&J, I remember them all. I remember their stories. I hold them to my heart. So when I come out and I speak for my people. I speak for each and every one of them, because many times what we see is parents who have carried that trauma don't go away. What we're seeing is a huge amount of trauma, and no one is addressing trauma. Dealing with individuals who say, I've been diagnosed with bipolar, I don't like the medicine, I don't feel it's working. And in my heart, I know that no one, they probably have PTSD. It's the trauma. It goes back to that trauma. How can we expect any individual to walk around with that and to have good mental health? to feel great about life, to go out into this world and raise these babies when we need to be focusing on that trauma. Trauma never goes away. We learn how to deal with that trauma. We learn to understand what happened to us, that we weren't wrong, that it wasn't that we were bad. It's that, but the amount of trauma that I see individuals walking around with today and carrying on their hearts, and we expect them to be functioning at this high level of, you need to be doing these things. They need to be addressing their own childhoods, that trauma, the traumatic histories that they've had in the abuse and neglect that's been inflicted upon them as children.
Yeah. Delphinia Romero from Las Cumbres Community Services, I want to bring you back in here. We heard a caller talking about this trauma and what parents are going through. Also, another caller, Andres, mentioning cars and access to transportation, which Leanna, your home visiting lead, spoke about earlier in the show. Delphina, how does Las Cumbres meet these very challenging needs for communities that are in spread out rural communities in the area you serve?
I think that one of the ways that we do that is the home visiting programs that go out into the home. Try and provide those services.
I'm sorry, Delphina, you're cutting out just a little bit. Can you move the phone a little closer to your mouth? Are you on speakerphone?
Yes, I am.
Oh, that sounds so much better. Can you start again, please?
Oh, okay. What I was saying was I think that the way we deal with that is the home visiting and also the services that can go into the rural areas and into the homes where we can, provide those services and families don't have to come in. Like Linnea was saying, we service all of Rio Riba County, Los Alamos, and also northern Santa Fe County. And that's a big area, and it's very rural. And, there are clinics there, but they're not always available for families. So that's one of the things that I feel that we do with that.
Beyond transportation, what are some of the day-to-day challenges that families may be facing as they try to take care of their kids?
Well, I think a lot of the people have talked a lot about that. Suzanne talked about the stress, the difficult times, drugs and alcohol, incarceration, very young mothers who don't have the skills. I think it was John who said that, they don't come with a manual and you don't come with the skills right away. And so it's really important to provide those services, to educate, to have parenting classes so that what John said was we value children, which is very important. You know, we need to value children and we need to make it so that children matter in our state. And that's how we can prevent some of the abuse and some of the neglect.
Linnea, can you tell us a little bit how folks get signed up for home visiting in your program? We had a question on Twitter from Katie Stone asking, how can expectant parents get into home visitation programs, and how many months does it last? How frequent are the visits? How does it work in your program?
So families can enroll at any time. We serve prenatal to the age of 3, so we would love to enroll families prenatally is best, because then we can really partner with them and build that bond and relationship with the family so that we can understand what ways that we can support them, whether we're just a safe, confidential person to talk to about their experience as a parent, or if they need other support with connections to their community or other resources in their community. So families can sign up. They can self-refer through our referring process. You can call into our Espanola office and self-refer. And what I really value about home visiting is that it's universal. It's for any family. So there doesn't need to be a risk or a background. Like everyone was saying, these babies, they don't come with a manual. And so first-time parent, second-time parent, we all are learning with that baby, and we partner as home visitors with you to learn about your baby and the cues that your baby is sending you so that you can best meet your baby's needs. Visits are typically weekly, for about 45 minutes to an hour, and my home visitors are really flexible in the scheduling of those. So if you're a full-time parent, then, you know, maybe meet after hours. I have some home visitors that usually meet on a Saturday, if that's the need of a family. But usually 45 minutes to an hour each week. And services can last up until the child turns three.
Mm. Frankie, what about the home visiting program through PB&J? How folks get signed up for that?
The same way that Linnea said, they're able to call into our agency. We also receive many referrals from community providers who are aware of our services, who are able to refer them. What we see a lot of times with PB&J is we have many self-referrals. So word of mouth, a lot of our clients or past clients will say, PB&J is really good. Give them a call. They'll help you. They're good people down there. You could trust PB&J. So it always makes me laugh because usually when I get a call, they say, my neighbor told me about you, or my mom, or somebody's always told them, and they said you'll help me. And so that's a lot of times how we get a lot of our referrals. But they're able to call into our office, or community providers are able to call in, however they feel comfortable.
Home visiting is one of the programs we've heard about as being a very positive, a lot of potential there for prevention of child abuse and neglect. We're going to hear about another home visiting program in just a moment. I'd like now to go to Susanna in Albuquerque. Susanna, what's your comment or question today?
Hi, thank you for having the show, Sarah. I also work at PB&J, and I'd like to talk a little bit about how we might start looking at state systems to consider prevention and to consider families that are often at very high risk and are not being reached. All state agencies come in contact with adults, and as we all know, most adults are parents or have children somewhere in their lives. And so in each of these agencies, take, for example, the Department of Corrections. We know that New Mexico has very, very high rates of incarceration, and we know that families are being fragmented every time a parent or a caregiver is incarcerated. And so we have to be asking the right questions. Where are the children? What's happening to those children? Because we know that the stress has risen in that household, and those children are now at higher risk. The Department of Corrections used to have programs that identified parents, and through the parents, we were able to identify the children in the home and then provide supportive services for them. We know that recidivism is linked to successful parenting and successful reentry into families. If we really have a system that wants to reduce recidivism and wants to stop parents from going back into prison, fostering that successful reunification to the family is really important. And when parents become involved with their children, usually there's a higher rate of support for the child and much better success for that child in school, socially, and in family. Another example is at the time of a parent's arrest. We used to have programs, say, at the Metro Detention Center, where when someone came in after an arrest, we could talk to that person and find out if there was a child involved. Bernalillo County is a system that has done a very innovative thing. They have set up a room in their waiting area, and when anyone comes in to visit someone, a person from PB&J comes out, approaches that person, and asks the question, is there any child at home? Now imagine, we know the risk factors. We know untreated parental mental illness is a risk factor. We know that untreated parental addiction is a risk factor. Imagine if in all of those systems, when an adult came in for service, if someone asked the question, who's at home? Would you be interested in having a home visitor come, especially children that are in those very, very early years? So I think conversations about how everyone can become an owner of child abuse prevention and really become involved in that. I really quickly want to mention one other really innovative thing that's happening. The South Valley has the highest rate of child abuse for children 1 year and younger. And so one of the charter schools, the Health Leadership High School, has made child abuse prevention a part of its core curriculum, and every year students are being trained in shaken baby prevention. Many parents think that hitting a child is abuse, but they don't understand what happens when a baby is shaken. And so this is a really innovative way of getting legions of young people out as advocates, as trainers, as people who are doing child abuse prevention.
Susanna, thanks for calling in. I like hearing those ideas about innovation that are happening around the state to prevent child abuse and neglect. We appreciate your call today. Do you have an experience that you'd like to share? Have you learned something about how to better parent your own children? Or are you working with parents right now, giving them the skills and tools, helping them develop the skills and tools that they need to be the best parents they can be? Give us a call. Join our conversation at 277-5866. Outside of Albuquerque, that's 877-899-5866. I'd like to welcome now Rebecca Riley to the KUNM Call-In Show. Rebecca is the Tribal Home Visiting Program Director for the Native American Parent Professional Resources, known as NAPPR. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, thank you for having us.
NAPPR has a home visiting program that serves Native families in Cibola, Sandoval, and Bernalillo counties. What makes your program different?
Well, I think what's really great about our Tribal Home Visiting Program right now is its extensive history of service working with Native American families and communities. NAPPR's been around for over 30 years now as an early intervention program and other supplemental support services for Native American families and children. The Home Visiting Program has been in existence since 2007 through CYFD and then through 2014 as a Tribal MCV, which is a Tribal Maternal, Infant, and Early Childhood Home Visiting Grantee. And we're one of three in the state, which is really unique. We specifically cater to those different, aspects of tribal communities and Native American populations. So it's really great to have that in the state of New Mexico, especially with all the other home visiting support programs here in the state.
I understand most of your staff are Native. They may not necessarily be from the tribe of the families they're serving, but does it make a difference for families in building trust that they have someone doing the home visiting who is Native, who maybe has some understanding of culture and what folks might be thinking about?
I think it does have an impact. In the past, we have had non-Natives be on our staff, and the majority of staff at NAPPR are non-Native, but there are some aspects to home visiting, and I think that the other programs can attest to this, that home visiting is really based on relationship and establishing healthy relationships within the home. And if there is a person that you can connect with, not just on a professional level, but maybe there's some other nuances within the home that the home visitor can communicate, either there's challenges or other needs that can be identified that are unique to that population, I think it definitely makes an impact, especially when we're addressing certain cultural aspects within not just Native American populations, but African American populations, Hispanic populations. I think it can have an impact, but it doesn't override the overall quality that a home visitor can deliver to a family.
Rebecca, thank you so much. We're going to go back to some calls now. We really appreciate you sharing a little bit about the home visiting program through NAPPR.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go to a break now. We'll be back in just a few moments and take more of your calls. You can join our conversation. We're talking about child abuse prevention. What do you think works for vulnerable families in New Mexico? What factors do you think contribute to child abuse and neglect in our communities? And how can we make things better? The number to call, 277-5866. Outside of Albuquerque, it's 877-899-5866. I'm Sarah Gustavus. This is the KUNM Call-In Show.
Support comes from MexicanWolves.org, hosting a rally for more wolves and less politics on Thursday, April 28th at noon, outside the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service office in Albuquerque. Details at MexicanWolves.org.
Thanks to you who donated by mail, web, or phone, and to all the groups and individuals who came in to answer phones. Thanks to Whiting Coffee for coffee, House of Bread for lunches, and B2B Bistronomy for dinners. Thanks to Two Wheel Drive in Albuquerque for donating the Salsa Bicycle Prize. Thanks to those who offered challenge grants and to Radio Frequency Club members for year-round support. We reached our goal of $200,000 by Friday's freeform. Thank you, thank you.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. I'd like to go now to Justin in Albuquerque. Justin, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, my comment was I was surprised that nobody had really mentioned poverty and investing in education more so in New Mexico. I mean, it's no secret that New Mexico's 49th in child well-being, and a lot of those problems stem from poverty, crime, drug use, and all those things. So I think if we start focusing on education more so, making that our priority, we can start breaking that cycle of poverty and reduce these instances of child neglect and abuse and crime and all kinds of issues that persist here in New Mexico.
Justin, thanks for your call today. I'd like to go now to Paula in Albuquerque. Paula, what's your comment or question?
Thank you. I wanted to raise another aspect of prevention, and I venture to say that it has become a rather taboo subject in our society as of late, especially in the presidential campaign, and that is creating conditions that enable each baby to be deeply wanted. And I would venture to guess that many abused children are not planned, and at a time in history where there has never been as many people on our planet, the issue of available birth control and contraception is critical. And just hoping that those resources are made available to the services offered, the wonderful services offered by those that are on the ground.
Frankie, is that part of what you're talking with families about, some family planning so that they can take care of the kids they have and plan the children that they want in the future?
Yes, ma'am. PB&J does talk about that with the families. That is very important. We want to make sure that families feel that they're ready when they are ready to have another child. We also currently do have a fund for families who do not have any kind of health insurance. So if they decide that they do want that birth control, we are able to pay for that appointment, for the visit, whatever type of birth control method that they have. So that is something that is very important to PB&J and making sure that we're able to offer to our families free of charge if needed.
I'd like to shift the conversation just a little bit here and focus on fathers. We've been talking about mothers and fathers, but I think there's definitely a conversation there to bring dads into this. I'd like to welcome now Emmett Mayon, Director of Fathers Building Futures, which is a project of PB&J Family Services. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We also have Vincent Aragon in the studio. Vincent is a dad, and he's part of the Fathers Building Futures program, and he's a supervisor of one of their jobs programs. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Emmett, we've been talking this hour. You've heard folks mention all the different ways to prevent child abuse and neglect. What are you specifically doing to work with fathers, with the Fathers Building Futures program? Why is that important to focus on dads?
You know, if we even listen to our callers who called in today, we had a couple of really outstanding fathers who were brave enough to talk about what they're doing with their own children. Fathers are always a part of it, and PB&J Family Services has realized that. Also, you know, our focus is also not just fathers, but incarcerated fathers. PB&J has been working with parents since the 70s, always with dads. And it really is about keeping children safe and nurturing the entire family. And sometimes people might think that's just moms, and it's not. Dads are absolutely 100% a part of it. And what we did, look, I've been part of PB&J for 10 years and worked with Frankie, and our hugest frustration was watching fathers come out of incarceration, and moms too, and not being able to find work. And they're ready, they're stand up, they've got it together, we've built trusting relationships, and when they get out, they're handed their children, and then have so many barriers in front of them. And so we created a strategy, at least, you know, trying to chip away at it, if not, you know, solving the entire problem, of working on financial stability, as well as bonding and attachment, which is the core of PB&J. So if you've been listening to Susanna, who called in, and to Frankie, PB&J's whole focus is attachment and bonding and working with the entire family. So what we did was we added the focus on it's a healthy relationship, it's being a responsible father and what that means. And then the third component is financial stability. So with financial stability, we also created a business called Fathers Building Futures.
Do you feel like sometimes you're up against some perceptions that dads don't care, dads are deadbeats, dads are not doing what they should?
100%, 100%, which is why I love the callers. I wish people can call in all day long, because people who called in actually really get it. We understand the stigma around moms, and certainly there's this, deadbeat dads. I mean, I've never met fathers who are absolutely more committed to being with their children than I have when working with Fathers Building Futures.
Vincent, you served some time in prison, and when you were released, you went to court to prove you were a fit parent. What was that like for you?
I mean, it was rough. You know, you get out, and nobody really has faith in you. Everyone looks at you. You're just a felon. You're just a convict. You probably shouldn't be around your kids. But, you know, for me, I know when I was in there, all I thought about was my children and getting out and doing good to be there for them. So, I mean, it was rough. It was a good 2-year battle just to get both my kids back in my life. PB&J helped me go to the courthouse. They helped me learn how to file the paperwork. They even helped me pay for filing it. They went to me with all my court dates. I mean, they helped me through everything. They helped me do the parenting classes. They helped me get certificates to take to the courts so that I can show, look, this is what I'm working on. I'm learning how to be a dad. You know, I haven't been there before, but I am now. I mean, life's a struggle. I mean, I've made my mistakes, but you know what? I love my kids, and I'm here for them now. And it took a long time, and it was a long, hard, stressful battle, but you know, in the end, it finally worked out.
Were you a little, it sounds like you had to put on kind of a strong and confident face. You were learning all these things, but were you a little nervous on the inside that whether or not you could really do it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was terrified. I'm not going to lie. You know, it was rough. I mean, this is something that I've never done before. As far as responsibility goes and actually trying to be that solid person, that solid father for my kids, I mean, it was rough, especially because, you know, when you're getting out, nobody has faith in you. Everyone's expecting you to go back and do everything that you did before, you know, and you almost can't blame them because that's what you've always done your whole life. So it really takes you just knowing that this is what you want in life. You want your children, and like, you have to know and believe in yourself. Like, nobody else can do it for you. So, I mean, it was hard. Yeah. Definitely.
Emmett, earlier in the hour, it was brought up that a lot of parents didn't have a good experience growing up. They didn't have parents who nurtured mm-hmm. them or who knew how to take care of them well, and they want to do things differently. And then it's a challenge when they have their own kids of where do I start? How do I learn those things? Do you experience that with some of the dads you work with?
Absolutely. I think Frankie and I can agree that, you know, working with families, what we really see is it's intergenerational. I mean, for most of our families, you know, when they were young, they were the victims of maltreatment, or their parents were in and out of the system, or addicted to drugs or alcohol, or dealing with so much. And so then they were the little pumpkin victims, and just a few years later, now they're the young parents. And so really what we're trying to do, all of us who've been involved today, is really to break the cycle. And I think we're all just figuring out, with such minimal resources and such long waiting lists, how we can just chip it away at breaking the cycle for the next generation.
And Vincent, what did it mean to you to have that stable employment that's part of the model for Fathers Building Futures?
I mean, it's huge. Getting out, definitely getting a job is the hardest thing for any man coming out of jail or prison. It's rough. You don't have that financial stability. You don't have any way to help support your children. You don't have any way to live. And a lot of guys turn around and go back to the old way of living because they figure that's the only way they're going to be able to survive. And so, I mean, it was huge for me. I was able to get my own apartment, start paying on my child support. Everything that I've worked to build, I mean, it had to start with that financial stability.
Mm. Frankie, financial stability has come up a lot this hour, talking about preventing child abuse, that stable financial situation for a family is important. Can you comment on that?
Well, one of the things I want to touch on that, going back to Vince, is that we see a lot of times fathers coming out on probation, parole, mothers as well. One of the main requirements is employment. And so PB&J is really lucky that we have Fathers Building Futures, that we're able to employ some of our fathers, because a lot of times we see parents that are going back just for not being able to get that employment and just kind of falling back, like Vince said, to the old ways because they don't feel that they have other options. I heard the gentleman who had called in and spoke about poverty. New Mexico is a very impoverished state, and many of the families that we serve are living in poverty as well. It is a huge contributor. I think that when families have such limited resources, that is contributing to the high stress levels in the home. So if families are trying to figure out how to put a roof over their children's head, how to feed their children, how to clothe them, that really leads to the high stress levels in the home. So parents struggle a lot of times to respond to their children's needs, maybe if the child is crying, or it's really difficult when parents have such limited resources and are just trying to figure out how to get the children to the doctor, to the other things. So poverty, you know, and financial stability, just having that financial stability is huge. And that's really where PB&J comes in, where we know that families need more. Sometimes it's just giving them a ride to get the baby, the well child check that they need, taking them to get the WIC. Right now what we're seeing is there's a lot of limitations in how much services we're able to provide to families. So if it's limited in the time, in the visit, if it's limited in as providers being able to take them down to the ISD to apply for the food stamps or to apply for WIC, that's kind of limited right now. And with the families that we work with down at PB&J, a lot of times that's what they need. They really need that support just to get them there.
That's interesting that that's, you know, that's this key part of prevention. It's not just about telling the parents how to raise their kids, but all these other things going on with the family. Delphinia Romero from Las Cumbres Community Services, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Delphinia, are you hopeful that organizations like Las Cumbres, like PB&J, these organizations serving families, can reduce the rate of child abuse and neglect cases here in New Mexico?
I definitely feel that we can. We've been collaborators with PB&J and with other organizations throughout the state. And, you know, that's where it's at. We're really trying to help families stay together and help them deal with that trauma that was talked about quite a bit, and help them to just really have those skills that they need to deal with difficult behaviors. Because a lot of times if children are not eating right, they're not getting the things that they need, those difficult behaviors come into the home. And, you know, we need for parents to be able to have alternatives for these behaviors besides hitting them, screaming at them, abusing them, all of those things. So that's where we really feel it's necessary to have that education.
Delphinia, thank you so much. I think this is the beginning of a conversation. We can certainly return to this and talk about what's working across New Mexico to protect kids and keep them safe. We did invite the Children, Youth, and Families Department to join us today for the conversation. CYFD declined. That's all the time we have. The conversation doesn't have to end there. Find KUNM News on Twitter or go to the KUNM Call-In Show page at KUNM.org. We'll post links to the organizations we spoke to today, as well as local and national resources. Thanks to my guests today. Today's show is a partnership between New Mexico PBS and KUNM. Check out public health reporter Marisa DeMarco's coverage of child abuse prevention on KUNM.org. I'm Sarah Gustavus, producer of New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. Tune in tomorrow night at 7 as we visit with a nurse and families in a home visiting program. Jefferson White is our engineer and Kaveh Movahead screened your calls today. Elaine Baumgartle is the executive producer. Join us again at the same time next week as we open up the phone lines for another KUNM call-in show.